sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. The title is The Zionist Agenda, Dr. David Kelly and the Propaganda of the BBC. There is a continuum, as it happens. You might like to ask me about Dr. Kelly and why he was assassinated afterwards. I have spoken of the need for independent parliamentary candidates of known principle and expertise over the past decade. And I have loudly said that our democracy and that of many other nations is illusory. The people, that is the demos in Greek, have little or no power in the pathways of their lives and of their nations. This applies especially to the poorer citizens. Think of the Greeks. Think of the Palestinians. I have detached myself completely from this disgusting election, and with all its triviality and gross dishonesty, but I have been pleased to give full support to Stephen Hopwood in his independent candidacy in this Totnes constituency. I've been asked to cover three areas in three quarters of an hour: global Zionism, Dr. Kelly's unnatural death, and the state broadcaster. I will pick out the most salient parts of each and finish by concluding where we have got to and what forces we stand against if we are to achieve those words with which I sign my name. I don't sign my name with the fatuous "yours sincerely," when it often isn't. I say "for truth, reason and justice." And I often say, "that child is my child." Some definitions. We must always start with definitions. I'm sure that Clegg and Brown and Cameron could not define a damn thing. I mean that because they're used to slippery words which mean nothing. Zionism, simply put, a promised land for the chosen people, promised by Jehovah, Yahweh, and chosen by Yahweh, the land, a political, colonial, and nationalistic ideology. Overwhelming numbers of supporters are Christian Zionists, and that is an oxymoron. Christ would not be a Zionist, but he was inclusive. The prostitutes, whatever, the lepers, not exclusive, which is Zionism. About 40 million people in the US are Christian Zionists, but there are many closet ones, including those within the Anglican Church. And I mean that too. There is widespread support in Pugin's Palace, the Palace of Westminster, the theatre of vanities and lies. Each major party has its Friends of Israel Association. The Tory one has 80% of the parliamentary party in its embrace. Being a Labour Friend of Israel is necessary if you are to achieve a ministerial post, and the website of the Lib Dem Friends of Israel is blatant treason. The relationship is treasonable in each party because it puts the welfare of another country, or entity as I prefer to call it, on an equal or higher footing than our own. Policies are supported which benefit Israel, but which sometimes harm British interests. Membership of Friends of Israel is rarely mentioned in debate or communication. That is, special interest is concealed, which would not be allowed in your parish council. Fascism, my definition, the subjugation of the individual's will and freedom by an overweening state. Humanity withers, freedom of speech is stifled, and the soul dies. Self-preservation becomes a dominant drive. I will read at the end a quotation from a book by Milton Mayer, written in 1950, who paints a stark picture of the German people under rising fascism from 1935 onwards. In fact, I wrote it, I forgot to bring it, but Google Milton Mayer in Global, in Information Clearinghouse, and you'll read words which describe exactly what is happening to the people of this country and Europe and America now. Right, the Zionist agenda. Jews dispersed, I have to give some history, it's important. Jews dispersed in the first century AD from the land they called Judea and Samaria. Some were proselytes for their religion. They wanted to spread the word. They spread around the Mediterranean shores and more widely. Some remained, the so-called Aboriginal Jews. They probably have the same genes, in fact they do, as the Palestinian people, ironically. The Romans did not usually drive out the people they colonized, and that is true. So it is unlikely that they drove out the Jews from Judea. In the 6th century, there was a mass conversion of the Khazar people, that is more or less Kazakhstan, to Judaism at the command of their king. These people spread westwards and nowadays form the majority of Jews, I believe. A Jewish identity is given by having a Jewish mother. That's a fact. Many Jews in many nations were well assimilated, but the religion tended to hold them apart and they clustered. Some populations were persecuted. I'm just thinking of the Amish. They clustered. They're in a cluster. Some populations were persecuted, as in the Spanish Inquisition and in Eastern Europe in the 19th century, the pogroms. In the UK, Jews were kept out of the law, medicine, and other professions, as were the Quakers with them. A Jewish atheist, Theodor Herzl, was prominent in the early Jewish Zionist movement, and a World Zionist Congress was held in about 1897. He said quietly, "If I were to sum up the Congress in a word, which I shall take care not to publish, it would be this. At Baal, I founded the Jewish state. If I said this out aloud today, I would be greeted by universal laughter. In 5 years, perhaps, and certainly in 50 years, everyone will perceive it." That was in 1897, before any Jewish Holocaust in 1942 onwards. Zionist settlement had started in Palestine in 1885, in fact. On the 22nd of November, 1917, the Balfour Declaration was declared. There it is. All of 126 words gave away someone else's land, which Britain would not have mandate over until 1922. The wording had been provided by the Zionist Lord Rothschild and by Chaim Weizmann, a chemist, Zionist. Balfour, a Christian Zionist, wrote privately a few years later that he had no interest in the opinions of the native peoples, that is the Palestinian Arabs, 20% Christian, 80% Muslim, plus Aboriginal Jews who weren't keen either. The Arabs rejected, later on, the grotesquely unfair UN partition, 56% going to the Jewish people, mostly new immigrants during the war and just after. and a third of the population of Palestine in 1947. 56% for this third. The so-called Arab-Israeli War of 1948 resulted. The Jewish forces were well prepared and armed. They had first-class, high-caliber weapons coming from Czechoslovakia. Spitfires were left for them, conveniently. From April of that year, 48, 800,000 Palestinians, 80% of their number, were driven from their homes, their land, and thus their living. They were mostly a pastoral people, living at peace with their land, by terror and by force of arms. El Nakba, as they call it in Arabic, the catastrophe, a euphemism, I think, continues relentlessly and without pity. That's from a site called Palestine Remembered. And there is a medieval quality, is there not, about that shadowy scene of tents. There are people living in tents in Gaza now because they destroyed 4,000 houses in the Greater Shoah, the Greater Holocaust, starting 27 December 2008. Israeli nationhood was dependent on Jewish acceptance of United Nations General Assembly 194. That was returned to the houses and land for all Palestinians who so wished. It declared independence in May 1948. That's the Israeli faction. And its statehood was quietly recognized, in fact illegally, by this gang, the new UN, even though not one Palestinian was allowed to return, and even though not one Palestinian was consulted, in effect. The efficiency and cruelty of this ethnic cleansing, another euphemism, could not have been surpassed by Hitler just a few years before. And remember that in intervening years, when Europe was being, when Hitler and the Third Reich were being rolled back by, among others, British troops were being blown up by Zionist gangs in Palestine between 1946 and 48. I know some of the men who survived. The steady robbery of land in the remnants of Palestine continues against all law and humanity. A majority of Israeli Jews and many racists in the West are determined to see Mandate Palestine cleared of all Untermenschen. Who knows what Untermenschen means? A few hands go up. It means the underpeople. It's what the Hitler regime called the Jews and the Romanis and others, and they are regarded as the, in fact, they're the Untermenschen. They're regarded, I'll tell you later. An early Zionist aim to gain all the territory from the Nile to the Euphrates is still in many minds. I'm closely involved with the Palestinian people. I should have returned to teach doctors and medical students last year, having set up a little medical foundation with some other doctors there for the charity that I founded, the Dove and the Dolphin. But the Zionist entity and the complicit and Zionist-dominated Foreign and Commonwealth Office, led by Mr. Miliband, stopped that. Many will recall an earlier attempt by boat just after the promised Holocaust. The boat was rammed with the clear intention of drowning all 16 of us on board. No responses followed from the Foreign Office regarding myself and the master, who was British as well. I tried quite hard to nail them, but it was like nailing an eel. Gaza is an internment camp. The draconian siege is beyond all law, and all the Western nations are complicit in their silence. Every imaginable crime is committed against the Palestinian people by a ruthless and pitiless occupier of the whole of Mandate Palestine. That's Palestine as you see it in the older Bibles. I just picked that one out, the villages of Al-Buruj in Gaza. I think that I don't know, I can't remember, there's every day this evil flows into my operating system, my computer. Imagine it in the Third Reich. And these are the three little sisters in the Holocaust at the end of 2008. I'll leave that on the screen for a moment. The Zionists have great power in the US, which is in effect a surrogate for it. Do you understand what I'm saying? Is that the US is subservient to it. And I say that with a great deal of knowledge, it's true. This is Mr. Sharon, who now lies unconscious in a nursing home or somewhere in Jerusalem, having had a massive stroke and a ridiculous 17-hour neurological operation at one of their hospitals. I want to tell you something that's very clear. Don't worry about American pressure on Israel. We, the Jewish people, control America, and the Americans know it. That's Mr. Ariel Sharon. Now, okay, he's an individual, so I'm not saying there is a general truth, but it's a repeated story. The Zionist lobbies wield great power in Australia and Canada and in the fascist EU. Just occasionally it is opposed. There are Zionist Jews in the US who hold dual citizenship, and many handle the levers of power, such as the Council for Foreign Relations. There are endless think tanks, Carnegie Institute, all sorts of things. It's quite extraordinary how many there are. And but there are about 50 powerful pro-Zionist organizations. Prominent amongst them is APAC, which you've heard of, and you've probably heard of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, run by a character called Foxman. PNAC, who knows of this? Hands up. 12. The full spectrum, it means the project of the new American century. It's in fact a think tank again, but it's central. It aspires to full spectrum dominance by the US of land, sea, air, space, and cyberspace. And they're halfway there, gaining Afghanistan, and the stans around it is central, particularly because it contains big hydrocarbon reserves, including Afghanistan, but also because it lies alongside Iran, which is their premier target now. The list of the signatories contains a majority of pro-Zionist Jews. Wolfowitz and Elliot Abrahams were the two who revised it most recently. That revolting Wolfowitz who promoted the Iraq War. And this think tank policy is central to US bombardment and occupation in the Middle East and in Afghanistan and in the decimation of Pakistan. The pro-Zionist Jews are in the driving seat of the evil empire being the US, and drove it into Iraq, although they always deny it. Iraq was the only Arab state that has stood against Israel for the Arab nation. Hussein had special arrangements for poor Palestinians, Syrians, to go and study medicine or whatever at a much discounted fee in Baghdad or wherever. He was keen on that. He was keen on the Arab nation. That is not forgotten, was not forgotten by Israel, by the Zionists, and was not forgiven. Now, examples of this control, I will just read a few quotations. January the 10th, 2009. The US House of Representatives, that's about 14 days after the bombardment an invasion of the civilian population in Gaza started. The US House of Representatives has voted to endorse a resolution backing Israel in its offensive in Gaza, in which at least 780 Palestinians have been killed already by that time. The kill ratio was one Israeli to 100 Gazans. And a few of those Israelis were killed by friendly fire as well. The body passed Friday's resolution recognizing Israel's right to defend itself against attacks from Gaza by 390 votes to 5. That's from the congressional records. Jeff Gates wrote the other day on Information Clearinghouse, "As yet, few dare speak of its name. Instead, four-fifths of those in our Congress recently proclaimed themselves loyal to a foreign nation, Israel, and insisted that our commander-in-chief maintain an unbreakable bond with what the facts confirm is an enemy. In other words, four-fifths would back the US, would back Israel, if Israel started sending nuclear weapons to Iran." That's the clear, that's the, you derive that. Dayan, you remember Dayan with the eye patch? "Our American friends offer us money, arms, and advice. We take the money, we take the arms, they sure do, and we decline the advice." That's Dayan. The fourth, Mrs. Hillary Clinton, Slick Willie's partner. "I want the Iranians to know that if I am the president, we will attack Iran." This is the primaries. She said, after being asked what she would do if Iran launched a nuclear attack on Israel. "In the next 10 years, during which they might foolishly consider launching an attack on Israel, we would be able to totally obliterate them." Obliterate them. Look at a map and look at the size of Iran. That's Mrs. Clinton. "Only 2% of the US population are Jewish, and the majority are said to oppose the Zionist project, but they find their voices are stilled, stifled. I will return to Zion, a hill in Jerusalem," that's what it is, "to view the scene at the end of this talk. Dr. David Kelly." Anyone interested in Dr. David Kelly? A few hands up. It's a long time, actually, July 2003. But that's how they work, these lovely governments. "A 59-year-old bacteriologist and our most senior germ and chemical warfare expert. It is said he considered the Iraq dossier, drawn up by the Joint Intelligence Committee, headed by John Scarlett, now head of MI6, isn't he, Annie?
Former.
What?
He's now retired.
Oh, of course he did. He was there for about a year. Sorry, I forgot that. Was exaggerated. The dossier, I hate the word sexed up, but it was exaggerated. Our friend Alistair Campbell, another psychopath, was responsible for that sexing up. Andrew Gilligan aired this on the Today program. The MOD in Sir Dr. Kelly was identified by the press, the requirement being simply to mention the candidate's name until Kelly's name came up. So it was quite deliberate. They should, in fact, they had a duty to keep his name quiet, and in fact, his job for the MOD, one of his jobs, was to liaise with the press about matters of secrecy, to interpret the scientific element. It is likely that he was one of several sources for Gilligan's story, so this man's always put forward as the source, but in fact there were probably at least two, a colleague of mine reckons. There was a questioning at the Foreign Affairs Committee and an assumption that he was crushed by this. Let's forget his name, the Labour MP shouted at him. It's always repeated. He was hounded by the press and belittled by Hoon, another psychopath. He went out for a walk from his home at 2 p.m. on Thursday, the 17th of July, 2003. That morning, he had written over 80 emails, and in one, he told a friend that he was looking forward to returning to Iraq, in fact, for the 38th time. 38th time. He had five encrypted hard drives, we are told, in his home office. He worked from home. A police search operation named Mason started half an hour before he left his house and his wife. Work that one out. She and the daughters, one of whom was getting married shortly, reported his absence at 11 p.m. to the Thames Valley Police. The search involved a helicopter with infrared camera, and you must ask me of that later. I've forgotten to speak of it. He was found at about 8 a.m. the next morning in the wood at Harrowdown Hill by lay searchers with a dog. Not his dog, their dog. He was dead and slumped against a tree. There were cuts on his left wrist, dried vomit from his mouth to his ears, suggesting he'd vomited lying down. He was found sitting up, or slumped sitting up. A bottle of water, part used and standing with its top on, and three blister packs of coproxamol with one tablet left in his coat pocket. I have no time to list the inadequacies in investigation and judicial process or the very many omissions. Lord Hutton was appointed within 24 hours of his death whilst the body was still cooling. That is speed beyond any normal experience of Her Majesty's government. Hutton was a safe pair of hands as leading counsel at the Widgery inquiry into the massacre of unarmed Republicans on Bloody Sunday by paratroopers, British paratroopers. The coroner for Oxfordshire opened an inquest and then adjourned it for the inquiry to take place, when in fact what should have happened, they should have had the inquest and then the inquiry of Hutton. I'll tell you later. There was every reason for the inquest to be completed and punctilious in such a high-profile case. Lord Hutton was charged with, listen to this, inquiring into the circumstances surrounding the death of Dr. David Kelly. The circumstances surrounding the death. This was to do mostly with the media and the assumption of a suicide. This brief was nicely tangential to the central function of a coroner, which would be, which is, the cause of death, whether it was unnatural, and whether there was foul play. It is complicated, but this was an ad hoc inquiry to which 17A was added later. In questioning, you might ask me about the Public Inquiry Act 2005, which was hurried through by a committee of nine MPs during the washout period after our lovely Mr. Blair had promulgated Parliament at that time. Hutton could not subpoena witnesses. He couldn't make them come. There was no oath and no cross-examination. It was a superb example of British treachery and of the new Labour government in particular. The verdict of this elaborate sham, this whitewash, as it was called, was 1A, hemorrhage, 1B, incised wounds to the left wrist, and 2, coproximal ingestion and coronary artery atherosclerosis. I did not believe one could die of hemorrhage in this way. I understate that. A short letter was published in the Morning Star, 16th of December 2003. I'd hesitated because I didn't want to upset the Kelly family. The key part of my little letter was, as a past trauma and orthopedic surgeon, I cannot easily accept that even the deepest cut into one wrist would cause such exsanguination that death resulted. Exsanguination is loss of blood, or complete loss of blood, or near complete loss of blood. The two arteries are of matchstick size. That happily, that little sound bite has stuck in the press, and would have quickly shut down and clotted. Furthermore, we have a man who was expert in lethal substances and who apparently chose the most uncertain method of suicide. It is in fact preposterous that he chose to die that way. In fact, it was only one artery, not the one you can feel easily, the ulnar artery. The vital importance, it's a very important point this, the vital importance of residual free press was shown by the fact that a fellow doctor, a public health consultant, had written with a Syrian colleague saying that their study of the national statistics had shown that death from slashing a wrist was so rare it was well nigh impossible. They wrote 3 months before to The Guardian, The Independent, and The Mail. This is our free press. All failed to publish it. They were marching in step with the totalitarian government. They are told what to do within certain parameters. A small group of doctors formed out of that letter who were determined to see Dr. Kelly's death subject to the due process of law. We demanded a reopened or new inquest. 6 years and thousands of hours of work later, we are still to see that. Lee and Day have taken on the case without charge for the time being. We learned that Lord Hutton had closed the medical records for 70 years. 70 years. Did you know that? You did. Some people did. Our plea for sight of these records is with the laughably named Ministry of Justice, headed by the execrable Jack Straw, who's currently campaigning in Blackburn, and Craig Murray has observed that he's treated 700 people to a fine curry against the law of treating in our election law. And in fact, Murray is trying to get him prosecuted. That's how liars behave. They don't know where the hell the law starts and the law ends. So we've got this far, and we're some recent success, and we're not giving up. Where the law ends, tyranny begins. John Locke said that in 1675. He was the leader of the Enlightenment in Britain, and I wish to God he was here now. Last stretch. Last straight. The propaganda of the BBC and the mainstream media generally, we mustn't single out the BBC, but they are a special case because they have a very good brand. If you look at BBC Online, it's also very smart, and they have correspondents all over the place. And some small parts are very impressive, some of the art, some of it. But most of it, I'm going to spend little time on this because you probably all know. I'm heartened by how many people have twigged how things are. But I would have loved to analyze the myriad methods. In fact, we were the question started to raise it earlier on after Stephen spoke. The BBC used to project and give power to the monarchy. Imperial war, you've seen Wooden Bassett a few times, haven't you? With those hearses moving slowly, and those men who've were outstanding leaders and who've were just doing their job. Shredding and burning mostly Afghan civilians. God, I don't know where we've got to. And they also, of course, support capital. In a big way, and corporations, and celebrity. And they tend to be of one ilk. They recently announced that Prince Philip had twisted his ankle. Remember that? He twisted his ankle, Prince Philip, this 86-year-old man, whatever he is. But they didn't tell you about a child who lost both legs in Afghanistan or whatever. They didn't tell you. And there's no name for the girl. We did know about Prince Philip. You know that Reith was the founder of what was to become the BBC, and that he was writing propaganda for the government during the general strike. Did you know that? Who knew that? Well, he was. Dave Shaler knows it. He's bound to know it, really. Its colour, that's the BBC's colour, mostly of the butcher's apron. What's the butcher's apron? It's the Republican Irish name for the Union flag. And that's what's used a lot to keep the jingoism and the killing going. In fact, the BBC is worse than ever. John Pilger, a brief quote, "Consider how the power of this invisible government has grown. In 1983, he means the media, in 1983, the principal global media was owned by 50 corporations, most of them American. In 2002, this had fallen to just 9 corporations. Today," he was writing about 2 years ago actually, "today it is probably about 5. Rupert Murdoch has predicted that there will be just 3 global media giants, and his company will be one of them. Tom Paine, my hero, warned that if the majority of the people were being denied the truth and the ideas of truth," it's important that, the ideas of truth, "it was time to storm what he called the Bastille of words. That time is now. The broadcast word and image sucks the truth from all. I was on the bridge of the motor vessel Barbara, which I had chartered in January 2003, because I was revolted by the looming Iraq war, the idea of it, and because I knew that Palestine was the hinge of our humanity. And I was being interviewed by BBC Spotlight, I just forget the fellow's name, before we steamed off to Palestine the next day. I spoke of the malnourished children in Gaza. I spoke strongly against the looming war on Iraq. Stop the camera. You cannot say that without a balancing comment, David. I said, we have had balancing comment for months. The camera rolled again. I said the same. Stop. It had, the third time I omitted the coming Holocaust on Iraq. Well, I was speaking the truth. The BBC won because I had no choice. It had given only 3%, listen to this if you don't know it, it had given only 3% of broadcasting time to people who opposed the Iraq war. Did you know that? 3%! It was analysed by Professor Greg Filo in Glasgow, I think it was him. There are several people studying the media all the time. It was the worst of all major Western media outlets, including the damned Americans. It is an all-powerful and evil organisation. I am pleased that more and more people know that. Conclusion. A civilized, life-enhancing, rather than a life-denying world is on a knife edge. The Luciferans gather at our gates with lucre in their greasy hands and bloodlust and conspiracies beyond imagining in their black brains. No soul, no love, no law, and from the dark side of a dark planet. It comes down to this, the pabulum. I first knew that word when I was studying bacteriology at St. Mary's Medical School. Pabulum actually is a Latin name for porridge. And in this instance, it's the media, the milieu, the medium on which things grow. You see what it is, don't you? It's the inauguration ceremony for Mr. Obama. And that's the pabulum. It spent $760 million, mostly given by people with a vested interest in promoting him. There was a sort of reversed racism. A lot of his supporters were black, who supported him because he was black. Yeah, sort of, you know, it is reverse racism, really. But that's the pabulum. This is why the media is so vital in the maintenance of evil power. Obama was chosen by Zionists as a young man. There's an article which I've got filed from a Zionist female American who was crowing over their new possession. He only served 3 years in the Senate before becoming president. 3 years. He has acquired the neurolinguistic techniques of Hitler. You see, he looks one side to the side. He has a very interesting cadence in his speech. And the puppets of the puppet masters, like the Rothschilds, Soros, the Duke of Westminster, the Kissingers, and Brzezinski, and dozens more. What was Obama's word he used in his campaign? It's one of utter vacuity. Change. Who's using that word now? Mr. Cameron. Guantanamo still exists, and they still torture people there. There's torturing all over the Middle East, partly because of Arab quislings, but mostly because of American dominance. There's a massive expansion of U.S. troop numbers in Afghanistan by 100,000. Then to Yemen, they're murdering by drones in Pakistan, and Obama is doing exactly as he was designed. This is just a few images of the hell that's been brought to Earth. I was 72 weeks ago. I was born, therefore, in April 1940. Nothing has been learned, and nothing has changed. If anything, it's worse, the depth of evil. You can imagine them saying, "Raghead, pray to Allah," as they made him do this in Abu Ghraib. The Third Reich wasn't worse. It's always deeply evil. This is an American sergeant punching the head of one of the prisoners, hooded, and there are four of them on the ground in Abu Ghraib. This is a nasty image. Who's seen it before? The lady's seen it before. This is Ali Abbas, who's been educated in this country since this thing. It's a very, very important image. It was 10 days after shock and awe started, and his arms were incinerated. The burn on his trunk was an inch deep, which they excised, and he's ostensibly a happy young adult without any arms. So he has to have someone hold his willy when he's having a pee or wiping his bottom. And that same night, his mum and dad and 10 other relatives were incinerated instantaneously. And I'm absolutely certain that it was a thermonuclear weapon. Don't tell me the Third Reich was more evil. The evil Jeff Hoon said, before the Holocaust of Iraq was set in motion, they reserved the right to use battlefield nuclear weapons. Did you know that? You can assume that involved neutron shells or bombs, and it was probably a neutron bomb which did this to poor Ali. And this, the paramount war criminal and psychopath, Anthony Charles Linton Blair, smiling after killing more than 1 million people, causing 1 million widows, 5 million orphans, over 2 million maimed, given the usual ratios of bombardment injuries, and 6 million refugees, including those in Afghanistan, and another 2 million into the Swat Valley. This was taken in November or December 2008 when he was opening his Faith Foundation. The words are joined together. They mean nothing. Faith Foundation, and he has several Nidus's nests of this. This was in Chicago or somewhere like that. But you can see that any man who can smile like that and look as urbane as that is a paramount psychopath. No one, I could not kill. My job was to get people going for road accidents and to heal people and to straighten things. And I would never have on, I would never have a mien, a face like that, after causing Ali Abbas what happened to him and a million others with them and breaking a country probably for good. Now, just a few more thoughts. Menachem Begin, who was the head of Gun or something, one of the Zionist terrorist organizations, terrorist, well before 9/11 terrorist, and who was responsible for blowing up British troops and others, and he said, he spoke of the Palestinians as cockroaches. Who knew that? No one knew that. Few people know that. Kissinger described us as ants, or as I think Neville told me, useless eaters. Is that right, Neville? That's right. Now, you are not insects to be starved and poisoned. We all have worth, each one of us, and we must reject totally these Kissingers, Beggins and Blairs, and oust them and get people of expertise and principle and good heart to represent our communities. Thank you very much.